coming back from woodcock hunting, and I said, we go and have a look to see is there anything there. Basically, most of the year, there was nothing there. But there was three hen fish there, and they looked very fresh now. This was, I'd say, I think it was either 2 weeks before Christmas. And the hen fish were, I would say, between 10 and 15 pounds. There was three of them there. But there was a cockfish there. And he was red, and he had the spots on him. He had his full spawning regalia on him. And I could see his kipe. And my son said to me, he said, Dad, he's a dolphin. And I know fishermen exaggerate, but he was 40 pounds. He was around 40. And I put my hand in the Bible and say that, but he was 40.
Hello and welcome to the Ireland on the Fly podcast about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland. For this week's episode, we speak to John Lawler, the Tipperary salmon and trout angler who's written about his local river, the Shure, and a lifetime fishing it. His book, The River Shure, A Blue Riband River for Trout and Salmon Fishing, is highly recommended for anyone looking to fish the river. And he also has a new book out called Fish Skelte, Game Fishing from Alaska to Lapland and the Swedish Arctic, which covers his remarkable fishing life beyond Tipperary, covering many of the bucket list destinations we can only dream about, as well as some of his other favourite fishing locations in Ireland. And before we hear from John, Tom, I sent you the picture of the 40-pound salmon that's in a cast lying in John's house.
Come on, Darragh. Yeah, I saw that. Immediately caught my eye straight away as I opened it. Wow, that's unreal. I mean, that's like, okay, now it's 10 years ago. No, but like still very much in the recent past.
But that's it. Wow. It's the funny thing is his wife was like, do you want it? He can have it. Do you want to take it? Because when you go into John's house, it's incredible. You're in an absolute outdoor man's house. You walk in, you open the door. There's, you know, John is a hunter in the winter time. You know, he's a fisherman in the fishing season. And you walk in and there's reindeers, there's antlers, there's rainbow trout, salmon, you know, there's flies all over the house on the walls. It's just, it just hits you. You just go, oh, yeah, I feel at home.
It sounds pure class, but like, I mean, you're just telling me there, I mean, and some of the things that he did in his youth. I mean, he's been an outdoors man all his life.
Yeah. We get into it in the interview. You know, he talks about in his 20s, traveling over the Rockies, going to Alaska, sleeping out in the tent on his own, fishing, you know, just living the life as you do. And just, yeah.
And yet with all of that, though, he still very much got his love for the Shure, though, didn't he?
Yeah, and, you know, the house, the Shure is 150 yards away across the fields from his front door. You know, you can see the river. As he says, his rod is, you know, permanently set up there. And he just goes down and, yeah, he says, especially, you know, in the evening time when there's nobody around and you can just fish there to his heart's content. But the funny thing is he's still a salmon angler at heart, I'll tell you. You know, that's... So
the two of you were kindred spirits. So.
Yeah, but, like, it's funny how... You know, I know he's written about all his different stories, but, you know, he's just as well known for his brown trout, probably. Yeah, complete all-rounder, hunter, fisherman, just brilliant to be in somebody's company like that, who's just dedicated his life to it, you know. But that's what I have to say, it's funny. So in where we did the interview, there was this big, massive cast of the salmon, and just, you know, lying there, like, you know, and he had managed to get hold of it. And yeah, it's a 40-pound salmon from the River Shure in 2013 that wasn't caught. It was basically found. It was on the banks
right of the river. What time of the year had it? Was it post-spawning or was it pre-spawning, do you know?
Didn't
or?
Get any of that now. He told me it was, they reckon it was, I think, 5 or 6 years old,
of age.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he said there was bites out of it, but that was probably an otter when it was lying on the bank.
Mm.
But just to think of, you know, fish that are there, you know what I mean, that size. I know we talk about it and, you know, how bad it's gotten and the numbers are falling off a cliff and all that, but there's still those elusive monsters that are there.
Still monsters. But of course the Shure traditionally, even when the runs were good, had a lot of big salmon. Okay, the Shannon probably had most of them, but the Shure, I think there's records of salmon.
Well, the biggest
of salmon over 50.
Yeah, the
Shure.
Biggest America. One was caught, I think it was like 59 pounds or 57
yeah,
pounds.
Yeah,
I don't have it to hand. People can correct me on that, but it's, yeah, and that was, that's the Irish record, which was. So
the Irish record is from the Shure, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that was the, 57, 59 pounds. Yeah, it's only kind of downstream of Clonmel now, is kind of where Kilsheel and that kind of direction. That's where the lads would be. So I haven't gone salmon fishing actually for down there. But again, whether my appetite talk, as I was saying to John, John, yeah, I'm coming fishing with you, whether you like it or not.
I'm just going to say that to you. Surely after that. Come here. John himself obviously still fishes it for salmon.
Yeah, fishes. But, you know, like you said, it's very poor season. There's actually a YouTube video he pointed me in the direction of. It was it's a guy who has a fishing and freediving YouTube channel in Ireland, and he recorded, he was on the shore with John, and I think John caught two salmon while they were just, he was recording fishing, and so has the touch.
Still has the touch.
It was great meeting him. And as I said, his book is Fish Scale To. It's about his fishing stories beyond the shore, all around Ireland, Mask, Carb, Derg, further afield, Lapland, Canada. So some great stories in it, and a life really well lived from a fly fishing perspective. And I first asked John about fishing the shore, which actually is just across the fields from his house.
I have my dry fly rod made up in the garage. And if the dry fly fishing or the sedge fishing is good, I just don't come home. I don't come home. You stay down there in the dark till it's all quiet. You might go, say it could be blue winged dollars first of all, but then the sedges could come on later, and it's pitch black. But the big guys, they let down their shields, and you can catch them, and it's great fishing. But it's I don't think it's as good as it was. But the rise seems to only last from 5 to 10 minutes now, whereas before it could be 40 minutes. Care Anglers, a great club. We control lots of the river from Quinlan Slip, which is south of Golden. Part of it is in conjunction with Golden. And the whole way down to Carrigatar, which is near the Arfinnan waters. Another club, great trout fishing down there. And, you know, just brilliant fishing. But, say if I drive 20 minutes to one place, but if there wasn't a rise, well, it was a waste of time. But down here, I go down and I'm there in 3 minutes. If the rise, if it's going to be good, I don't come home. That's it.
And tell me some of the good fish you've caught. What's the kind of size? What would
The average size, say, would be just short of a half pound. But I have caught them. Well, my best fish on the shore, fly fishing, was 4 pounds. 4 pounds. But that fish, had four crayfish of 5.5 inches inside them. Now the crayfish are all dead in the shore. They are in a few little streams. But those big fish, I don't think a couple of little blue-winged olives or sedges were going to keep him fed. He was going to need something bigger. But the crayfish,
And what did you catch them on?
I was actually salmon fly fishing, and I was actually salmon fly fishing with my trout rod, and I think it was a collie dog about a size 12, and the water splashed in front of me. I thought it was a pail or something small salmon, but it was a beautiful hen fish, 4 pounds weight.
Fabulous. It's idyllic. I often would fish, say, Ballybrado stretch, obviously downstream from here. And I can totally agree. I know what you're saying in terms of those 5-10 minutes. It only comes on for a few minutes, but I love that kind of, just those few minutes when it just starts getting into the dark and it just switches on. And like you said, they lose any inhibitions.
Yeah.
And it just switches on. And I remember one time, I think I write about it in my book, is I was walking back, it was too dark then, and I reeled in and I said, I'm heading home. And I'm literally walking by the riverbank. And all I can describe the sound of the splash was like as if a cow had fallen into the river. The splash was so big. I got the fright of my life, quickly unhooked tried to find where the hell it was. Of course, didn't land anything. But it just gives you that sense of, my God, some of the fish that are in there are just...
Oh, there's some holes down there. Sure, they're deep. And a lot of it is overgrown. It's hard to fish some parts of it now down there. But the old Irish shanochle, they said, Aishle fum na haun agus joy to brack. that means listen to the sound of the river and you will get a trout. So that's what you're saying there in English.
I didn't know. I've never heard that.
Yeah. Eisht le fum na haun. Listen to the sound of the river. Agus yoig to brack. And you will get a trout.
That's brilliant. I'll have to put the Tom Docks of Gregor, so I'll have to say that to him. He'll appreciate that. Like, tell me, in terms of, what about the salmon? Like, that, like, are the pretty much non-existent at this stretch of the river. Like, you know, people still fish for them below Clonmel. But, like, the Shure used to have a fantastic back-end run, wasn't it?
Well, I'm from Clonmel. I started fishing in Clonmel when I was 4 years of age in the river. And I joined the Clonmel District Salmon and Trout Anglers Association when I was 18. I'm 68 now. I only feel about 38. Now, my first love is salmon fishing. Now, I fish for Ireland trout fishing, but my first love is salmon fishing because I grew up in Clonmel and it was brilliant salmon fishing. Now, I married a care woman like you. The brilliant trout anglers in Care, international anglers in Care are a dime a dozen. As I always say, the Irish for Care is Cathair Dúnaoiseachí, the four to the fishers. I reckon half my friends in Care were born with a fly rod in their hand. Now, that's the way I put it. But going back to Clonmel, I used fish below Clonmel. Well, in my profession, I was a national teacher. And when I went to college in Dublin, we used to have to do teaching practices in the summer, at the start of the summer and at the end of the summer. And you couldn't get a summer job because all the jobs were gone. So my only thing was to turn to salmon fishing. And that's what kept me going. That's how I made my pocket money. And my aunt, O'Gorman's Bakery inside in Clonmel, she had tea rooms and she would give me top dollar for it, yeah. But those days, no. Last year, 2023, was the worst year in living memory. It was the same on the shore. I fish in Sweden. It was the same there. A friend of mine in Norway said it was the same there. Now, I did fish for Ireland in the World Masters Championships in September in British Columbia. And the pink salmon run, we were supposed to fish some rivers there, but the spawning run was late. And you couldn't fish the river, the practice session, because of that. So it was the same everywhere. It was a disaster. But I do remember when I started off in below the town, it's brilliant salmon fly water, brilliant. I reckon I know one hole. I consider it the best fishing pool in Ireland. But I won't say where it is, but I know where it is. But and just to say, we're sitting inside in the room here now, yes. And there's a cast of a 40-pound salmon, and that was caught below Clon. No, it wasn't caught. It was found dead on the bank of the river on the 13th of February, 2013, near Coronel, near Carrick and Shore, by some local fishermen. Now, part of the stomach was gone. They reckon it was an otter that caused it. The cock salmon, it was a cock salmon, it probably died after spawning. And the fishery board got the salmon anyway, and from what I can remember, they estimated it was 5 to 6 years old, and you can see it was 40 pounds. So it's over 4 foot long.
It's an incredible specimen. And yeah, I have taken a picture of it, so I'm going to put it up on the Instagram so people can see the picture of it, because we're only talking 2013, 10, 11 years ago, and you're saying, like, this is a fish of over 40 pounds that was found. So it just gives you some idea of the size of the fish. And that was 10 years ago when things were bad. Now, we know things are very bad now, but it just shows you the size of some of the fish that were still there in the river.
Now, I won't mention the river, but it's a tributary of the shore, and my son and I were coming back from woodcock hunting, and I said, we go and have a look to see is there anything there. Basically, most of the year, there was nothing there. But there was three hen fish there, and they looked very fresh now. This was, I think it was either 2 weeks before Christmas. And the hen fish were, I would say, between 10 and 15 pounds. There was three of them there. but there was a cockfish there, and he was red, and he had the spots on him. He had his full, what would you call it, spawning regalia on him, and I could see his kype. And my son said to me, he said, "Dad, he's a dolphin." And I know fishermen exaggerate, but he was 40 pounds. He was around 40. And I put my hand in the Bible and say that, but he was 40.
When was this?
2 weeks before Christmas this year. He was a monster, a monster.
I know the numbers have dropped off. I know we're in the danger of a precipice here in terms of the numbers, but to still hear stories like that, to still see fish like that, it just...
All the other weekends we looked at this place, there was nothing there, not even a trout. And you know the trout will come up behind the salmon for the eggs. But so the way it works from what I can see is there's a flood, right? We're here now between the Knockmill Downs and the Galtees. So the flood runs off the mountains first and it goes into the tributaries of the shore. And just as that flood is running off the tributary, the fish run up and spawn. Just as it's running off the tributary. And then they turn and they disappear then. But no, I have no hesitation in saying he was 40 pounds. Well, around 40, as my son said. And he stood up and wherever we were and he said, "Dad, that's a dolphin." That's the way he described it. No.
Incredible. Your heart must have been in your mouth to see it. And it's heartening as well to see it.
And just to look at his kype. Now, for me, there could be some people listening to the kype is the salmon's mouth that they used to grip the female when they're spawning. But his kype was like a small shovel. I could see it. I could see the white underneath it. But he was, as my son said, he was a dolphin.
That's incredible. Take us back, actually, to, like you said, when you were training as a teacher and you were in the summertime, you were fishing. You could actually fish then for salmon. To earn money, isn't it? That's incredible to think, isn't it?
There's people I know in Care and Cashel who made their living from salmon fishing and trout fishing. And there was plenty of fish in those. They didn't. That was going on for generations. Don't say to me those people wiped out the fish. They didn't. No, they didn't.
It was, and so were you, was it literally a case of you would see them swimming through the river, you'd see the numbers of fish when you were?
I remember fishing below in Clonmel, and the nets, the snap nets would be off at the weekends. I think it went on a Friday night at sometimes, and they came back on Monday morning sometimes. I can't remember the exact time. But if you went down below Clonmel, you would see the pail going through and pail. I mean, the 3 to 5 pound salmon. Some people, we call them pail. Some people call them peel. But in Clonmel, we call them, you would see them going through in shoals. Yeah. But I will say, now, I was teaching two good friends of mine, Robbie Marr, who put, young lad putting in a lot of effort into catch and release trout competitions on the Annor. And Lucas Rees, who ran family days with me inside in Clonmel District Salmon and Trout, I taught Lucas how to salmon fly fish during COVID when you could go within your county, I think. And we went down below Clonmel and we used to see in one stretch, this is 4 years ago, could see 50 salmon moving. And Lucas was catching 3 at a time in the morning. Yeah. And I know those guys, they basically, so last year they kind of stuck to their trout fishing because there was no salmon there. You can catch what isn't there. You can't catch what isn't there.
Do you worry about what happened last year in the sense of, Conor Arnold memorably described it as falling off a cliff, and you see what's happening out in the ocean in terms of marine heat waves. We know what's going on in terms of man-made issues like with fish farms, all that kind of stuff. Do you worry that it's terminal?
I always say, never say never. Now, we keep records in the Clonmel District Salmon and Trout Anglers Association. You have to say how many salmon you caught every year. And John Condon, he was on the fishery board one time. he keeps, he does all the records on the computer and makes the graphs. So before, everybody could say every 4 years was a good run. So I think COVID now, there was a good run 4 or 5 years ago. So I would be really worried if there isn't a run this year. I don't take drugs, but to me, salmon angling is a drug. There's something about it. But I think you have to be crazy to be a bit of a salmon angler, because you can be out there. You could be out there for months and catch nothing. But, you know, you talk about hatcheries now. Some people say they should be there. Some people say they shouldn't. But you think of the west coast of Canada, British Columbia, say, and what the indigenous, the First Nations people is what they call the Indians there. And how did the Indians, how did they spread the salmon around? You know what they did? They got the salmon eggs, the salmon spawn, and got a little basket and moss and put the eggs in it, and then they distribute them around. Now, I was fishing in the Masters team there in September, and I was on a bridge on the Clearwater, and you could see the salmon running up along the side of the river, and they were even spawning. This was the last 2 weeks in September, but right behind them were the big rainbows, and the big rainbows had basically all, in this particular area, all our trout fishing messed up, because the smaller fish were hiding that we were looking for. But what the big rainbows would do, they would attack the female pinks to get them to lay their eggs and eat the eggs. But it was interesting to see there was dead salmon in the bottom of the river. There was dead salmon along the shore. And you said to yourself, gee, that's terrible. Nothing is surviving. But that's the way with the Pacific salmon. And it was only when you saw it with your own, yeah, they all die.
So because of your love of salmon fishing, did that lead you then to want to fish international locations? And hence, obviously, there's a lot of stories in your book about that.
When I was doing my leaving cert in, what was it, 73, on the Irish course, in those days you could get two honours for Irish. There was a book called Rohi Moor and Tale by Mickey McGowan. And Mickey McGowan came from a small farm in Donegal. And there wasn't much, as you know, there was much unemployment in Ireland. So he worked on local farms. Then he went to the north of Ireland. Then he went to Scotland picking potatoes. Then he went to Montana. I've been into Montana. You see the flag of it there on the book. And he worked in the mines. But then there was the gold rush in the Klondike. Like many a young man, he says, I'm going there. Now, he did go there. And he went up through Skagway and the Chilcoot Pass. I'm reading this, and they fed on moose. I don't know, it did something to me. I said, I'm going to do this myself. So I used to be the secretary of the Clonmel, the Shore Valley and District Gun Club when I was 22. And we had a release pen in Lisrona, but the man who owned the land, he had a daughter in Canada. So I flew over to Canada. And I got on a Greyhound bus. I had a youth hostel card, a rucksack, a one-man tent, Cook traveller's checks. That's what you had in those days. And I started hitching. And the first day I started hitching, I couldn't get a lift. I didn't realise this local prison was nearby. So I got on a Greyhound bus, crossed the prairies, went to Calgary, up into the Rockies, fished in the Rockies. I remember once staying in the youth hostel, and there was a fella sitting at the table, and he was staring into oblivion. There was something wrong with him. I said to one of the guys, what's wrong with him? He was attacked by a bear earlier on in the day. And I used to carry a knife myself, 5.5 inch. Then over the Rocky Mountains into Vancouver, up Vancouver, Ireland, salmon jumping everywhere, up into Ketchikan in Alaska. But I'd lost some money, so I couldn't go any further. So I lived in the forest there for a week on salmon and milk and cheese. Cost me $15. If you were to do it today now, it probably cost you $4,500. But I wanted to go to Skagway, but I'd run out of money. So then I came back down. And then one day, didn't all my I missed the bus and all my gear went away on the Greyhound bus. I had to sleep in the ditch for the night. But then I said to myself, gee, because if there's ever a war, it'll toughen me up. So it was cold, so I had a hoodie. I put the hoodie over my head and I had a couple of sandwiches. And I took the tinfoil off the sandwiches and I put that inside my chest to keep warm. And it was nice and quiet there for the night. Sure, I woke up in the morning, the local Royal Canadian Mounted Police Station was down the road. But twice I slept in the ditch on the side of the road over there, yeah.
You were obviously used to being outdoors. Didn't bother you camping out, sleeping out in the rough?
You're out in all weathers fishing. You know, you get wet and damp. But over there, it's dry heat. To be honest, the worst thing was the mosquitoes. Oh, they were. That was tough when you get your... And you know, when a mosquito bites, he injects you with something, an anticoagulant, to stop your bleeding so he can suck your blood. And that makes you itchy. And you would scratch the bite until it would bleed because of having the cut bleed was better than the itch. No, that was it.
And you got great fishing?
Yeah, all right kind of fishing. I caught lots of bass. I went up into the Rocky Mountains looking for a cutthroat. I didn't catch any, but you weren't allowed to go too far back into the mountains because there were grizzlies there. Now, grizzlies don't take any captives, you know. They're the boss. And I remember I caught Dolly Varden in Alaska and pink salmon, but I came out one morning for my breakfast. You had salmon for breakfast, dinner and tea, like, you know.
And it was everything you caught.
Yeah, you wrapped the salmon in tin foil and you made a fire. Now, it was hard enough to make a fire because it was the Tongass rainforest. It wouldn't be an equatorial. It would be a temperate rainforest. And you'd throw the salmon in and open up the tin foil and eat it. And you'd have some left over for your breakfast in the morning, but it came out one morning and everything was gone. I think either a bear or a wolf took it. So you got your fly line and you tied it up between trees and you hung your food from it. But you could not keep the food or your rucksack inside in the tent because the bears or whatever could come in. And the reason why you couldn't have your rucksack inside, it was very hot during the day and you'd sweat. And there'd be salt in the back of the rucksack so they can smell the salt.
And you're on your own for the 2 months?
Yeah, but he who travels alone travels furthest and fastest. And you'd meet people all the time. You're never on your own. No, you weren't. You camped out with fellas. You met women on the boats going off up there. I remember lying out in the boat looking up to see the Northern Lights. Never saw the Northern Lights. Sleeping on the deck of the boat.
Did that kind of give you the taste for the wilderness and, you know, going out into these places?
Yeah.
You know, so you've gone to... Tell us about some of the other highlights that you've...
So then I suppose, like, Conor Ireland is a great friend of mine. And in 2005, I was 50. And I had my money saved up to go to Patagonia, to Rio Gallagher. So, you know, we know enough about that. So anyway... But then I didn't qualify for the world, the Fipsmoosh World Championships in Sweden. Never in Sweden before. So there were six of us in the Irish team. So went to Sweden. I just fell in love with the place. Like, there was sea trout, Arctic char, grayling. Never caught a grayling in my life. And I just fell in love with the place. And then I went down the town, Lycksele, the capital of Lapland. I went down the town with the boys one day and I looked in an auctioneer's office and I said, "Jesus, lads, look at the price of the houses here." I said, "In my job, when you divide by 10, you take an odd away." I said, "Divide that by 10, take an odd away." Jesus, I said, "That's a bargain." So we came back anyway. I had a great time there. I said, "I'm going back there." So, you know, been kind of Machiavellian. Ryanair were doing flights to Copenhagen Stockholm that Christmas. So I took my wife and my daughter. Sure, they thought it was great. 3 or 4 days. So in the summer, I said, took them back. I drove them around Northern Lapland for 2 weeks, he said, would you? So we saw this house, and all the houses are timber framed over there. So I bought that house and I did it up, and I had it for 16 years. Yeah. So, and I had the best, like, if you come to Care, everybody would say, Leamy's Lane, Leamy Farrell. So I used, when I came into Care first, he helped me with my fishing. But I got to know the locals over there. So I would know all the local hotspots, secret pools. There's boys listening to this now. And we have one secret pool, and what was it? We went there for a week, and we had an 11, a 15, a 28, a 21, a 19, and I had a 34 pounds Atlantic salmon, or Baltic salmon. They are the Atlantic salmon, but they live in the Baltic. So, but I went over there this year, nothing, saw one fish. Again, people were swimming in the river. It was so hot. There wasn't enough snow. Like, if we get a lot of rain here, the salmon will run. They'll run up as far as Care. But they have to get a lot of snow over there, you know, to have the ice melt, ice out. I mean, just same disaster as we had here.
Would you go over once, twice a year, kind of regularly? Like, when you had the house?
I used to go over about three times a year before, but I go over about once a year now. So during COVID, you couldn't go over at all. And okay, last week over there, it was minus 44. So you have to keep the house heated. So we couldn't go over there for 3 years. So we said we'd sell it. But my friend's over there, he has four houses. So I basically have to deal with four houses for nothing. The last time I met him, I said, he wouldn't charge me. I said, I'll come back if you charge me the next time. Like, you know, that's the way.
Well, you're the first Irishman I've met who once owned a house in Lapland. So, like, that's fair play. Because I have to say, I fell in love with the region. We were in the Finnish part of it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just, there's something magical about the landscape out there. So I can only imagine what it's like during the fishing season. Like,
you'd hardly meet another fisherman. It's quiet. You won't hear a sound. The sound of silence. That's the... It's... And, okay, they have walkways, sledding, they call it. And they're just grass or mucky pathway covered over by trees. Yeah, and you walk quietly along there. And it's, you know... Okay, I'll be taking some of my friends over there now in... One, I have an article about Loch Conn in the book, but when the Loch Conn competition is over, we'll go over there, some of my friends. But we might go for a week, but no, you don't go, you might go for a week, but you get 2 weeks fishing because it's only 4 hours daylight. And what happens is when you go over there, you'll fish for 14 hours, but the body can't take any more. So you just whack yourself to sleep, you just drop from fishing. Yeah, but the Baltic salmon. And Connor, we've fished hard. We know what it's like. Like, if you wanted to go fishing with me and be guaranteed a salmon in Sweden, I'd say, stay at home. I'm not taking it. I said, you go and take your chance, but you could catch the fish of a lifetime.
It's not a numbers game over. Like,
no.
No, but if you catch one, the chances of being a big one.
Oh, they're big. You know, in Jockfall is right on the Arctic Circle. On the Kalix Alv. Alv is the Swedish for river. Lax is the English, the Swedish for salmon. So we went up there and, because I've seen, yeah. I remember sitting in the restaurant in the campsite one day, and they had a television, but there was a fish ladder around it. And you could watch the salmon going through, and they were all averaging at least 20 pounds, right? But a few years ago, a salmon went through there, and they estimated his length. And from the, it was way over 100 centimetres, I can't remember now, way over 100, but they estimated it at 80 pounds weight. Yeah. But those salmon, They'd break your heart. You'll see them everywhere. They don't take well. They're not, Conor will vouch for me when I say this, they're not aggressive takers. But by God, when you stick them on, you might as well, as I try to explain to people, right, the Jeep is outside there. Tie a rope to the hitch on the Jeep and hold on to it. This is what you're dealing with. But no, there, but you know, my best one was 34 on a 13 and a half foot fly rod on a fly I made myself from a black fallow buck that I shot out in Cloheen. And it took 35 minutes to land him, but I stuck another fish, 40 pounds. No, I couldn't hold him. Couldn't hold him. And on my reels, I've 500 yards of line. Because these guys, whatever way they're built, if you stick them on, they just turn around and head for the sea.
You're not holding them back.
No, you're holding, just hold on. Just tie a hitch, rope to a hitch, and just, that's the way I describe it now.
So as well as fishing, hunting is a big part of your life. Even growing up was a big part of your life.
Oh, yeah. Anything I have, I got it from my father and his friends.
They were big outdoorsmen, really.
Yeah. Basically, you're here in my house today. It's the 28th of February. Today is the last day of the hunting season.
So, sorry for keeping you inside.
So I'll put away my guns now today, and I'll concentrate on the fishing when the waters go down. It's miserable out there today, and the river is flooded, like, you know.
So you love nothing better. So whether it's the fly fishing season or the hunting season in the winter, just being out in the outdoors, whether it's the mountains, the fields, the rivers, the lakes, that's your place, is it?
Peace and quiet, yeah. Peace and away from the maddening crowd, maybe. yeah. No, that's what I like, yeah.
It's really interesting. So the River Shore was about, you know, the river here that was local to your life. Now Fish Skelta is about all the stories around the world and further abroad. We always ask everybody on, and I didn't give you forewarning on this, John, so I'm going to put you on the spot, but we always ask our guests this, is what was your most memorable fish on the fly?
I think the 34-pound salmon I caught in Sweden, because I took my friends with me, and I minded them for 5 days, and I said, the last day I'm going to take care of myself. And I had, and look, this is Ireland on the fly. I will adapt to the situation. I tried spinning for a while. I had a fish at 21 pounds. There's a picture of him in the book. And there was high water in the river. So we put him into a pool and admired him. He was perfect. We released him. But we had him in a pool, which I played him into. And then I said to one of my mates, I won't mention his name, but he was supposed to get an operation on his knee. And he went for the pre-op on his knee, and he said, the specialist said to him, oh, no, sorry, we're not doing your knee, you're going to have a treble bypass instead. But whatever he did, your man, the surgeon did some job on him, because your man had a 26 pounds, or was it a 26 or 28 earlier on in the week? And he carried him up a cliff, basically. But anyway, it was only him and me were left on the last day. And I said, I stood up in a rock and the water was going down. And I threw this fly I made myself and it stopped. And I stuck on this ferocious fish and it went 400 or 500 yards down the river. And it went into a kind of a lake, dead water. And I played it for ages. Eventually, I got the fish in. It was a hen fish. Now, my mate wasn't too used to a mobile phone, so the picture of me holding my hand doesn't give the right. You know, you can destroy the idea of a fish by shoving the fish into the person's camera, but he's 25 yards away from me, and he couldn't get down to me, and he wasn't used to an iPhone. But that was my most memorable, because I had lost so many big fish there before. They frayed the line and rocks, but I had learned from my mistakes, and the fish went through the gap in the rocks and into the lake. But in the end, to get in the fish, I used to have, instead of pumping the fish, I had to run about 12 yards, pull the fish, and then wind in. I pulled her and back. I didn't pump it. That was it. So, and then I suppose the next fish after that would be the ones I lost, the 40 pounders I lost. Oh, Christ almighty. Yeah. I'd just like to know what size they were.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The one that got away. Well, I'm going to ask you a follow up then. Can you give me a memorable fish on the fly on the shore?
My best salmon on the shore was down in Ardfinnan. I was using a 15 foot one rod. It was the last day of September, the last day of the season. And I had two choices. It was after work. It was the last day of the grouse season. You can only go shooting grouse for 1 month of the year. The last day of the salmon. So what would I do? Whatever I decided, I said I'd go down to Ardfinnan. And anyway, I went down and I went to this place, a noted fly fishing area. Colonel Charteris caught a 45 and a half pound salmon there. It's in my original book, The River Shore, a blue ribbon river for trout and salmon fishing. So I went down there and I knew there was a rock there and the fish would lie behind the rock. Next thing, I stuck in this fish and I played him. I said, he's about 14. He came in close to me anyway. I said, he's 16, but he must have seen me. And he went ballistic. And he headed down the river. And I followed him for about 200 yards. But what was there was a big tree that had fallen in. So if he went under the tree, that was it. So I had to really put the pressure on him. Now, I have a net. I have one of these New Zealand nets. And there's a scales built into it. So I played the fish really hard, got the fish in. Now it's catch and release. And I weighed him. It was a he, yeah. 22 pounds. The hook buried in the kipe, it was a size 12, single barbless. That's what you could only use at the time. It's double barbless now, single barbless. But it took me 15 minutes to release the fish. The fish was bit. Like you'd hold him upstream, hands under the head, grip the tail, and then you'd let him go and the head would go down. But 15 minutes to release the fish.
And what's your hopes for the season now to come? You know, hopefully the salmon season will pick up. You'll obviously do a good bit of trout fishing. Okay. Do you kind of do the trout fishing more kind of dry fly summer evenings type, or we just start now after Paddy's Day?
I'll put it this way. The fishing season begins on the shore on the 17th of March for salmon and trout. One time it used to begin for salmon on the 1st of February, but that's changed now. Now, I don't care if it's the flood that the Israelites went through, I'll be fishing for salmon on the shore the first day. And I did that 2 years ago. And I caught a big trout, and then I stuck in this thing. Now, a spent salmon that has spawned, some people call them different things, a spent. There was awful high water. You couldn't fly fish. I was spinning. Look, I spin and I fly fish. So anyway, I said, this isn't a no spent, I said. After 15 minutes, I got it in. And I had my net and I had my IFI mat and I measured them and I took pictures of them and I released her and people said to me, oh, John, you caught a spent or a slack. That made me kind of angry, like, you know, it insulted my intelligence. So what did I do? I took scales from it and I sent it off to IFI in Dublin. I think it was Dr. Gargan got back to me a few months later and he said, John, that was a proper salmon. It was 5 years old. It had spent 3 years in the river and 2 years in the sea. Now, what we used to call them at one time in the shore when you catch them were March rats. That's what they used to call them. March rats. March rats, yeah. But it was a proper salmon. Now, I know the first day this year now, had opened on the Black Border. We went down to Connor's place, and my friend had won. It was very high water, but he had won spinning. We had a bet on who'd catch the first fish, so I lost it. He had won after a while. Small spent again, released. And I saw fish break where I was fishing. And I said, Jacob, I said, that could be a decent fish. But I got into the water. I think it was 8 degrees, right? And I was, but thick trousers inside me, breathables. I saw where the fish, and I fished it with the fly now. Fly I tied myself. And I stuck in the fish. And the fish stayed out there in a third of the way. I didn't come in. But again, it was another spent, like. We saw no. That's early in the year. We had a bit of fun, and my friend had a trout of 5 pounds. And if that trout was now, the trout season wasn't open on the Blackwater at that stage. We released everything. I have pictures to prove it. But if that fish was caught, during the proper season, he'd be 7 pounds. You know, after the bad winters we had, the floods. I was shooting duck down near the shore, and I heard something behind myself one night in the field. I thought it might be a rat or something like that, but it was either a salmon or a big trout. Yeah, in a field, oh you God. Know, the field had flooded, it's so, and the water gone back.
It's so flooded, isn't it, at the moment? Like, I've been hoping to try and get out, and then it's like the water is so high.
It's gone again, yeah.
There's no let up with it. Like, so, look, fingers crossed for the season to come in terms of the salmon numbers. Hopefully we'll see some kind of return. It can't be as bad as last year, touch wood. And I'm sure hopefully this time I might meet you on the riverbank sometime, John. I haven't seen you. First time I've met you, so hopefully this time I'll recognise you now.
Live in 5 kilometres of Barn.
Exactly. And just to let people know, the new book is called Fish Skelte, Game Fishing from Alaska to Lapland and the Swedish Arctic by
it's
John.
It's available on Amazon.
It's on Amazon.
Amazon is the place to get it, yeah.
Perfect. And it's full of stories from Montauk, British Columbia, Sweden, Lapland, and even as far afield as Damask.
And there's Loch Derg, Loch Sheelan, Loch Conn, and there's Rutland and Ibrook and Menteith in Scotland as well.
Well, look, I hope people have got a real sense of your journey as an angler. It's incredible stories there, and if you want to read more, Fish Skelte by John Lawler is out now on Amazon. John, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you, and tight lines. Yes. And remember, Eish le fum na haun agus yoig du brak.
Our thanks to John Lawler for joining us on the show. Don't forget to rate, review and follow the Ireland on the Fly podcast on Apple, Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from.
Plus, you can keep up to date on IrelandOnTheFly.com as well as on Instagram. And myself and Tom will be back with another episode about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland.